lot of times when your season isn't quite what you want it to be. So, for example, competing for a Big Ten championship or being in the Final 12 or being in that playoff, so to speak, that eventually the Badgers' goal is, hey, we want to be there.
Yeah.
Sometimes what you can do is not – salvage is such a bad word. Every week it's really tough and you want to have program marks. You can say, well, we got a trophy game coming up and we have bragging rights on Iowa. Well, they didn't do that. We have bragging rights on Nebraska. They didn't do that. The bragging rights on Minnesota, kept the axe. They did that for 14 years in a row at one point. Didn't do that. All the trophy cases are bare. So it is really one of those seasons that you scratch your head and go, man, you know, we have a lot of work to do to get back to something that we need to be in this program.
Yeah, it's Lance, is a very sobering feeling, and I think that's where a lot of Badger fans are, and we'll continue, and we'll take a lot of the reaction here tonight to not only just the game that we just watched, and many people that were at Camp Randall, 70-plus thousand that were here today braving the elements, were a part of the sixth coldest game here and the coldest in over 50 years.
I knew it was cold. I didn't realize it was that cold.
Pretty
I guess
remarkable,
I'm getting pretty pampered
well,
up in that press box,
I was going to say, listen, when you were up at the press box and you didn't come down for those final 5 minutes, you know, Lance, it makes it feel a little bit warmer. They close the windows when Lance Allen walks in here.
I'm sitting up there just hanging out, all that stuff.
Already we get on and the windows start closing here in the Matt LePay broadcast booth.
It's brother, I'm soft. S-A-W-F-T, soft. That's the way I am.
Oh, man. But you're great, and that's why we love you. And the Badgers, far from great here today. We'll discuss the results throughout. But before we continue, let's take 10 seconds and allow our local stations to identify themselves across the Badger Sports Network. 10 for an ID. This is Badger Football from Learfield.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Here at Barry Alvarez Field, Camp Randall Stadium, Badgers fall 24-7 in the battle for Paul Bunyan's axe to the Minnesota Golden Gophers, who finished their regular season 7-5. Badgers finished theirs 5-7. And watching some of those seniors who, you know, battled to be able to be on the field here today, I think of Hunter Waller.
Yeah.
Lance, I was down on the field for the final couple of moments, the closing moments here today, and really emotional. Hunter Waller was one of the final Badgers to step off. One of the most, I think Matt said, respected Badgers in a long time. An in-state kid, had a career that on the field from his play is remarkable. However, the wins and losses won't be there, and it'll not be looked upon fondly necessarily from the fan base, but that young man put a lot into the W. And it meant a lot for him to be able to be on the field here today after missing last week. Good to be able to see him in action.
Missed last week. You knew full well that barring something unforeseen, there was almost no way he was going to miss this game and miss this, because you know full well he's got a future on Sundays, as they say, even though they play on Thursdays and Fridays and every
playing
day
right
in
now,
between and all that stuff.
Amen.
And Monday nights and whatever. But you know full well that he's going on to the next level. And that's the disappointing part in this, Billy, is I know it's a new era. You know, we won't delve fully into it on this postgame show. I'm sure we'll get somewhat into it. Everybody will speculate now for months, and it fuels a whole new cottage industry of, you know, be the coach, be the athletic director, be the whatever.
Be the GM almost.
Be the GM almost, with nil programs and with who's coming in the portal and what do you do and how do you recruit, whatever. It's a whole cottage industry. But I know it's almost a bygone era, but for guys like Hunter Waller, for guys who either walked on, not that Hunter Waller did, he was on scholarship, but the walk-ons, Hunter Waller, that's what this program was built upon with Barry Alvarez. And somehow they need to tap into some of that, where it really means something for these guys to play for either their home state team or for this program. And that's something that's going to have to be worked upon, obviously, in the offseason, is I think to gain that identity and to really see what it is, to kind of blend the old with the new, so to speak.
Well, and finding an identity
is
maybe the easiest way of putting it, Lance. It sounds like a very simple deal, but right now this is a football team that lacks an identity. And that team on the other side, whether or not it's the formations you run on offense or the style of defense you play, their identity was playing a full 60 minutes and taking care of the football, being sound tacklers, and winning the margins. And those were what Minnesota was able to dominate here today. Sadly, the Badgers were unable to dominate any bit of the line of scrimmage. Ran the ball 24 times as a team, for 36 yards. That's a 1.5 yards per carry average. We got a lot more as we continue here. 24-7, the Golden Gophers take back the Axe, and the Wisconsin Badgers finish the regular season here tonight at Camp Randall Stadium. Not positive if it will be the last time we watch the Badger football team here in 2024. A lot of that continues throughout. But we continue here from Camp Randall Stadium. He's Lance Allen. I'm Bill Schmidt. Our postgame show is presented by the local Wisconsin UB4 dealers. This is Badger football from Learfield.
Every Qdoba catering order is a fresh-made Mexican feast of hand-smashed, flame-grilled, sliced, diced, and sautéed flavors perfect for any occasion. Whether you're planning your office's tortilla Tuesday, hosting a post-game party for your intramural dodgeball team, or trying to bring in a dinner for your PTA meeting that's so good, it'll bump your kid up to an A-minus in Spanish class. Qdoba Catering. Fresh, hot, easy, delicious. Order today.
Have you ever tried to put a roof on your house?
Ouch!
What about trying to run power to your new hot tub? Yep, we've all made that mistake. Hi, I'm Sean Cleary. We have an amazing team of experts that are ready to get to work for you. We use the latest technology to design and manufacture your custom Cleary building, giving you the best value for the building you deserve. Stop in or explore clearybuilding.com today.
Cleary built with pride, the Boulder Shamrock supplied.
This is Badger football.
Tight pocket, down he goes, inside the 40-yard line.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
When you think about early labor unions, do you think of Wisconsin? You should. The state's first labor union formed in Milwaukee in 1847 when the bricklayers organized, then the carpenters union in 1848. The national labor union didn't even form until 1866. A state historical society report shows Wisconsin's union members also pushed for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance legislation, becoming a model for other states. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating, without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, the loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
I am Rosario Dawson. Cancer is one journey no one should take on alone. And Stand Up to Cancer wants to make sure no one has to. We bring together the best scientists and doctors to help accelerate the development of more effective treatments. And with the support of individuals like you, more patients will see that even though cancer may interrupt the journey, it doesn't have to determine the destination. Join us and let's go further together. Learn more at standuptocancer.org/AA.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
24-7, Minnesota beats the Wisconsin Badgers. Bad news to report here from Camp Randall Stadium. I'm Bill Schmidt alongside Lance Allen as our postgame show here continues across the Badger Sports Network. Lance, there's a myriad of numbers and championships.
I like that. Myriad.
And celebration statistics on the far sideline. They will not be adding to it here and haven't in quite some time. There's many people that will make grand statements about the university, about the program, about the athletic department at this exact moment. We'll leave all of those statements to the hot take artists. But at this exact moment, it's fair to say that feels like a real inflection point for the Badger football program. We already knew that they were going to make a move here in the offseason with the offensive coordinator, maybe a little bit of an earlier start here, and there is definitely a ways to go in terms of not only just, you know, being able to coach up the talent that you have, but also in this new world of college sports, there's some talent acquisition here that could continue.
The other thing is, okay, a lot is going to be lobbied at Luke Fickell and the coaching staff and all the way on down, whatever. But to your point, Billy, and we're just, you know, talking right now off the top of our head and kind of trying to process this, and it's almost like Thanksgiving leftovers. You're trying to, you know, see what's still valid, what's still good, what's palatable, whatever you want to say. You look out there, and to your point, when you look at Big Ten champions, the last time was 2012. It's been a 12-year drought. Last Rose Bowl, 2020. And for a program that wants to, at the top of the goal list, would be compete for a national championship, something that some Badger fans were like, well, that's fine and great that every year you compete for, you know, to go to the Rose Bowl. And those 3 years of going to the Rose Bowl, people were like, aren't you sick of the Rose Bowl? No, I'm not sick of the Rose Bowl. No. Nobody should be sick of the Rose Bowl.
I love going to the Rose Bowl.
It was awesome. It's one of the best venues anywhere. But the thing is, Billy, and you know it, is be careful what you wish for. They're not close to, obviously, that playoff level, at least at this point. And then, B, even those goals, and those should be lofty goals, whether it's a Big Ten, competing for a Big Ten championship or a Rose Bowl or anything like that, do seem like there's a little bit of a gap there now. And so the gap needs to somewhat be closed in the offseason. How much they can close it, that's going to be recruiting like crazy. That's going to be transfer portal, working that like crazy. That's going to be a whole and nil, all that stuff. And I know people don't necessarily want to hear all of that, but now it's going to turn to that.
It's a part of it, and we see it in the ever-changing landscape of college football that teams can really overhaul their team and their roster in the blink of an eye. Mm-hmm. However, with the volume of players that are entering the transfer portal, Lance, now more than ever, the understanding as to who you're bringing into your program, how they're going to fit, how they're going to develop, how they're going to potentially get better, who is potentially not going to get better with them being here in the lack of development and time that they're going to be on the field. Like, all of those equations come into it, and it makes for an extremely difficult balancing act. However, it feels like right now the expectation is you need to get better quicker than ever before. And right now for the Wisconsin Badgers, it's a difficult time to be in that mode, albeit it's clear you do need to get better.
First of all, look at that schedule next year. And we've got a long way to go. It's almost like looking at the NFL schedule, and every year, you know, everybody plays they're going to win this game, lose this game.
They're
going to be 10-7 or whatever. So many things change even week to week. But you look at that schedule, and it's daunting. You go to Alabama, you go to Oregon, you've got Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, Indiana. I'm going to leave somebody off the list. Okay, first of all, you need to get better just to be competitive next year. The other aspect of it, Billy, and you mentioned it, is there's going to be some long looks in the mirror. There's going to be some cold, hard truths. There are going to be a lot of changes in this program.
Yeah.
Because in order to get
That's
to where
sure.
you want to go, there are some that are going to have to go. There are some that are going to hit the transfer portal, go somewhere else, whatever you want to say. There were 30 recruits here for the Oregon game for a reason. And once again, we can talk about dollars and cents and whatever, that to some degree, you can't go out and get the mega free agents like what's happening in college
sure.
football.
Yeah.
But you need to be almost like what the Brewers do. And I know it's a little bit apples and oranges,
mm-hmm.
but how the Brewers have to be, make sure when they give somebody money that it's not that
the right one,
the right one. And it's not going to cost them a ton to give them that money, whatever. It's a good value pick, so to speak, and it's going to have to be the same for the Badgers.
And, you know, and I'm not trying to make excuses here. I think it's just a rational statement. Look at Max Brosmer here for the Golden Gophers. Transfer comes in from New Hampshire, plays mm-hmm. all year long, takes care of the football, has a run of over 200 pass attempts, Lance, where he doesn't throw an interception. Like, it's hitting on the ones that you
bring
in. They
don't turn the ball over. That's what you get. You have to.
And that's the identity. You got to find that identity here of what this program is going to be about.
We were talking about it, how Minnesota has that penchant that they've had a Rashad Bateman, or they've had an Eric Decker, or they've had like certain like a running back or a receiver or somebody who's a difference maker, but they haven't been able to put the entire offense around it, like have a really good core of quarterback, receiver, tight end, running back to make it. But what does PJ Fleck do? Every year they usually finish above 500. They don't beat themselves. You have to go out and beat them, and it's very tough to beat them. Ask Penn State. Mm-hmm. Ask a lot of different teams that they may lose, but they make it very difficult for you to win. And that's what the Badgers first have to get back to be a tough out, and then eventually get to that signature win that they didn't get this year, and to become even more competitive in the very deep Big Ten.
Yeah, he also makes it very easy to not like him.
Oh, absolutely.
Very,
jumping up and
very
down.
Very easy to not like him
chest,
on that sideline.
Running
Goodness
out ahead
gracious.
Of the team. I could go
oh,
on and on.
Oh, man. Yeah, I think there are a lot of Badger fans here at Camp Randall that felt that way. But, hey, spoils go the victor. To the spoils go the victors. And today, that's on the other sideline, sadly. The Golden Gophers, now 3 out of the last 4 years, will control Paul Bunyan's axe. The local Wisconsin UP4 Dealers postgame show continues in a moment. This is Badger football from Learfield.
Stop the bin.
Ready, set, tailgate. Upgrade your tailgate this fall with cookout faves from Prairie Fresh Pork, like ribs, chops, and tenderloins. Juicy, tender, and delicious every time. Want to ensure a touchdown? Add bacon from Daly's Premium Meats. Daly's makes the bacon that bacon lovers dream about. Look for Prairie Fresh Pork and Daly's Premium Bacon at your local Piggly Wiggly.
Piggly Wiggly, shop the pig.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world. We are born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober. Or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
We know you're a fan, but is Badger pride in your blood? Here's your chance to prove it. This season, Abbott and the Big Ten are kicking off the largest blood donation competition of our lifetime to fight one of the worst blood shortages in a generation. Simply visit bigten.org/Abbott to sign up for the We Give Blood Drive and help settle once and for all that the Badgers give the most spirit. Again, visit bigten.org/Abbott to sign up.
We are experiencing an energy transformation. Wind and solar farms are being built. Coal is being phased out. But the wind doesn't always blow. The sun doesn't always shine. We need reliable energy available on demand. To keep our data centers, manufacturing plants, and homes all operating, natural gas electric generation is necessary for Wisconsin. It provides the bridge we need to a renewable energy future. Wisconsin Infrastructure Investment Now asks you to support natural gas.
Badger football is on the air.
And the Badgers defense puts a touchdown on the board.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Action! When I grow up, I want to be a director. Because they get to talk to everybody about everything. They get to make cool movies and dance music videos.
If your child is sick over and over again, it could be PI, a defect of the immune system that affects millions. Early testing can give children a chance to dream.
And when I'm a director, I get to say, lights, camera, action.
For more information, visit the Jeffrey Modell Foundation at info4pi.org.
That's a wrap.
Diane from Michigan, a disabled senior citizen trying to get by. Henry from Florida, a veteran fighting to make ends meet. Elena from Arizona, a mother struggling to feed her daughter. Hi, I'm Connie Britton, and I support Feeding America because they help provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year, like Diane, Henry, and Elena. Learn more at feedingamerica.org. Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Welcome back to the camp. Barry Alvarez Field was warmed today. The new heating coils were needed as Camp Randall Stadium was chilled more than it's been in almost 50 years today for a resounding victory for the enemy. 24-7 the final as the Golden Gophers take Paul Bunyan's axe back to the Twin Cities. I'm Bill Schmidt alongside Lance Allen. It's time to select our energizing performance of the game, brought to you by Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy is powering beyond for you. And Lance, I think there's a couple of moments here, but most importantly, it would be after the Badgers get a touchdown, they're able to finally get on the board after it's 21-0, drive down, best drive of the day, 11 plays, 65 yards, almost 5 minutes off the clock. Vinny Anthony scores from 15 yards away. Then Minnesota seemingly says, all right, sweet.
Yeah,
bet.
Cool.
We'll drive down the field, set up a 49-yard field goal from the Oak Creek native, misses it badly off to the left side. And at that exact moment, it sparks a drive which then gets extend, which, you know, moves through down to the Minnesota 10-yard line. And it's first and goal, or it's not first and goal, but it's first down inside the Minnesota 13. You could get a first down at the 3-yard line without end up scoring a touchdown. And then ultimately the Badgers get turned away. There's a holding call there. But at that moment, this place was live. You had a drive where some momentum is going your way. You get jump around. You're all the way down into the 10-yard line
yep.
and unable to capitalize.
Yeah, and it's just been death by paper cuts. It's been one of those situations this year, Billy, and you and I have been here for every step of the way, so we can talk about it, where you get a penalty, and, it, and the penalty was obvious, and you miss a field goal, and just certain things that you need to do in order to get back in the game, and you're not doing it. And sometimes those are the things that are overlooked when it's going well. You know as well as I do that when it's 21-7, and some people like, oh, what was the field goal? 21-10, at least you get that momentum. A touchdown would have been even better to make it 21-14.
God, yes.
But still, when you miss a field goal, you can just feel the wind go out of the sails mm-hmm. of everybody. And just other things, whether it's like, you know, pre-snap penalties or certain mistakes are just almost inexcusable, if not inexcusable, because it just – everything deflates out of the team. It really, really does.
No doubt about it. And it was a deflating moment. It felt like for the Golden Gophers, they missed the field goal. Badgers take advantage. They have an opportunity to make it a one-score game. And then, you know, you try to kick the field goal, try to salvage something after the holding penalty. That goes errantly.
Right.
And as you mentioned, all the energy that you had been building up quickly was out of your sails. That's our energizing performance of the game brought to you by Alliant Energy. Alliant Energy is powering beyond for you. And in the midst of this, Lance, this is the Badger football postgame show, so we focus on the team with the W's on the helmet. In this game, you have to give credit to the opposition, though, as well. And I know some people don't necessarily love to hear it. They deserved to win the football game here today because they played physical. They dominated the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
And in that exact exercise right there, responded at the most pivotal times of the game.
Didn't it also seem this year, and obviously I don't think either side of the ball was stellar, but isn't it also the tale every week where one week it's the offense that does fairly well and the defense, like against Nebraska.
Yeah,
and then this week it was, okay, I even wrote it down, kind of like what you do. You just kind of write notes as you're going down, you know, along the game, whatever. First series for Minnesota, 3 plays, 6 yards. Next one, 3 plays, 9 yards. So you get 2 3-and-outs, and the Badgers don't maintain the ball. Like, literally, they have the ball for, what, like 2 minutes? And I think time of possession in this game was, like, 33-plus for Minnesota and 24 and change for the Badgers.
Wow.
You know what I mean? It was, and at home, especially, that shouldn't happen. The yardage is, like, you know, essentially,
the yardage goes 374 to 166. The Badgers had 48 yards of total offense in the first half.
So 200 more yards of offense for Minnesota.
And picked up 3 first downs.
And 3 first downs. So, you know, basically, yes, the defense did a good job to a degree. But then all of a sudden, Minnesota does get some momentum, and they gouge them with a couple of explosive plays. And all of a sudden, before you know it, it's 14-0. And it just, everything kind of cavalcades from there.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And not being able to halt the momentum and being able to get it back on the side, the issue for Luke Fickell's football team here in 2024 and head into potentially the offseason looking for a lot of answers. And maybe we'll get the answer to if it's already onto the offseason or there's one potential game to play coming up in a couple of days from right now. But today, it is a disappointing result, a bitter one to go. However, in front of a lot of recruits and commits that were already here today rocking their Badger red, a lot of room for improvement for the Badger football program, no doubt about it. 24-7, the final here today for the wrong side. Minnesota gets the victory here today, 24-7, the final. That's Lance Allen. I'm Bill Schmidt. More of the local Wisconsin UP4 Dealers postgame show is coming up. This is Badger Football from Learfield.
FS Envision Seed Corn and FS High Soy Soybeans provide best-in-class traits and genetics that perform. In farming, bushels matter to your bottom line. Our field-proven products deliver high yields year after year. Get the seed you need from the people you trust.
Contact your local FS Envision and High Soy retailer or visit fsseed.com to learn more.
It's the Get Holiday Ready sales event with Hank and Sam from the Ford crew. Today, a new shipment of inventory.
Hank, what's going on?
Another hauler full of new Ford trucks and SUVs, Sam.
So much SUV capability. Is that?
Ford F-Series, the best-selling trucks for 47 years. And a big selection means...
big savings?
Yep, which means...
it's the best time to buy?
Well done, Sam. And time for America to get holiday ready with Ford.
Based on 1977 to 2023 CY Industry reported total sales.
This is Badger football.
Tight pocket. Down he goes. Inside the 40-yard line.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers. Game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Why? Why take a chance? Why risk a mistake? Why say something? We all have reasons why we choose to ignore the things that give us pause, that seem out of place, that don't feel right. The word why can either paralyze us or empower us to stand up and protect what we love. So if you see something, why do you say something?
I see safe for my family.
I see safe for my friends.
I see say for my students.
We see say for each other.
I see say because all of this matters.
We all have something worth protecting. A why that unifies this community we're all a part of. So protect your everyday. Report suspicious activity to local authorities. If you see something, say something.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome back one final time for the 2024 regular season to Camp Randall Stadium, high above Barry Alvarez Field. I'm Bill Schmidt alongside Lance Allen as the Badgers fall today. 24-7 the final. At points, it necessarily didn't feel that close. And then all of a sudden, later stages of the third quarter into the fourth quarter, possibility to make it a one-score game. There's a lot that you can say about this, and I know we will say a lot in the local portion of the post-game show, Lance. But and I know that some people will laugh and some people will say no one cares. Proud of the fight that the team did show here today, because there is a moment when you play 30 minutes of football,
yep,
you have three first downs,
yep,
and the scoreboard reads what it did, where there can be a real shutdown factor, and instead for the final 20, 25 minutes, this team put their foot down on the gas pedal and did what they could to try and bring it together. Was it enough? No. And I listened to Mark say it really well. Were you going to come back and win the football game? I don't know. However, I do know that there was an opportunity for this thing to get real ugly if the effort wasn't there, and that's something you can't say about this 2024 Badgers football team. Are the results what they wanted? Absolutely not. But it's definitely not for a lack of effort from those kids. They gave everything they could here today in the Badger.
And here's the deal, Billy. You know it as well as I do. Yeah, they're young men. You know, they're 18 to 23 years old, whatever. So they're not kids, but they're obviously early in their development in life. And, okay, can we say they need better talent next year? Yes. Can we say better depth? Absolutely. But the one thing is, and you mentioned it, like 14-0, you're like, oh, this could get you didn't see anybody completely giving up, you know, mailing it in, whatever you want to say. Yes, people aren't going to want to hear that right now. To their credit, and you got to give them credit because they're young individuals, that did not happen. Is Minnesota a better team? Absolutely. It was shown on numerous occasions today. Can they get better? Absolutely. They need to get better for the future. But that's the one thing is it's unfortunate that the seniors and for some individuals that will not be a part of this program next year that they went out in this way or conceivably going out this way if there isn't a bowl game and things like that. That's the unfortunate part. But at least they went down fighting.
Yeah, and there's a lot, again, there's a lot that people are going to say in the weeks and months leading up, and also then into the lead-up of next season, because this will be one of the more highly anticipated off-seasons I can think of, Lance, because there's clear change that is on the horizon with the offensive coordinator coming in, whoever that ends up being, whatever that change comes with, if that's philosophical, if it's just personnel-wise. And then also there is an expectation, and a rightfully so expectation, that things will improve. And from that sense of urgency that I know everybody in this athletic department and in that football office are feeling, good things can come from pressure. And I'm excited to see how they handle it in this offseason. Very, very anticipated, but there's a possibility for a lot better days on the other side.
So here's the deal, and I kind of hinted at it, so now we're there. I'll quickly mention it. You know, basically, this offseason is now going to be a cottage industry. Like, you know full well, Billy, everybody likes to Monday morning quarterback things. Everyone with fantasy football or DraftKings or whatever likes to be a GM and say, hey, my team is better than your team, and, man, I'm brilliant, and I know how to identify talent, whatever. Well, guess what? This offseason, you get to play that between the offensive coordinator, between, you know, who's coming and going in the portal, recruits, you know, the NIL. It is going to be a whole off season of that, and it is going to be a cottage industry for the next at least, 3, 4, 5, 6 months or whatever of people speculating but also getting excited. And that's one of the somewhat positives is, hey, you know, there will be some things to be excited about and to be curious about, and hopefully it gets better in 2025.
Got a message here. It says, are you really not going to let fans vent? Well, Scott and Aaron, that is what the local postgame show
is for,
and it is on the other side here from Camp Randall as we will turn the network side loose and we'll open it up, and absolutely there will be plenty of reaction from the locker room as well. Mike Heller is standing by speaking with players and coaches after the game. You'll hear more comments from Luke Fickell as well. And yes, your calls and texts here coming up as we parse through not only the 24-7 final here today as the Badgers lose to the Golden Gophers, but the entirety of the 2024 season for the Wisconsin Badgers. One final time here from Camp Randall Stadium. I'm Bill Schmidt. Lance Allen is right there. Make sure you stay with us for the local postgame show. It continues in Madison, 1310 WIBA AM and 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. Thanks to our on-site engineer, Dave McCann, Aisha Jackson, as well in our Learfield headquarters.
It's been a fun year, Billy.
It really has, man.
It's been an awesome year. So, yeah, we're going to keep it going on the local, but as far as the network goes, Billy and I, we had a blast doing the show.
No doubt about it, man. It's always fun, and to be able to be in this environment, it is never lost how special this place is. No doubt about it. This broadcast is a copyrighted presentation of Badger Sports Properties, property of Learfield, under the broadcasting rights granted by the University of Wisconsin. Rebroadcast or reuse of this presentation is prohibited without the express written consent of the University of Wisconsin and Badger Sports Properties. The announcers are employed by the Badger Network with the approval of the University of Wisconsin. General Manager of Badger Sports Properties is Scott Silvestri. Alongside Lance Allen, this is Bill Schmidt, hoping that you'll join us throughout the men's basketball season, women's basketball season, hockey season as well. Badger Sports never cease. And keep your eyes peeled to Badger Football Online and get any information if indeed there's one more game to be played. This is the Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Badger football has been brought to you by UW Health Sports Medicine, treating the Badgers, treating you. U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank is a proud partner of the Wisconsin Badgers. U.S. Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Favic Cat, your Caterpillar dealer throughout Badgerland. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Badger Sports Network.
Welcome back to the Maggie Daunt Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska filling in for Maggie Daunt. Coming up in a half hour, it is the Dominic Salvia Show, and it'll be hosted by our producer today, Jess P.S., so stay tuned for that. I'm joined right now by Mark Sommerhauser. He's the communications director at Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're going to talk a little bit more about school referendums in Wisconsin. And if you were a voter in Wisconsin, chances are in the past couple of years, you have seen a school referendum question on your ballot. In fact, we had over 100 of them here just in the fall. In fact, 139 total. So if you were a voter in Wisconsin, you have seen these on your ballots. Mark, I appreciate you joining us here today, because I think this is a topic for a lot of people that can be really confusing. Like, what am I voting for? What am I voting on as far as school referendums go? But also just in the context of where things kind of stand with everything else happening in the state in terms of policy, in terms of pushes by legislators, I think school referendums are kind of a fascinating area because it affects so many people. Thank you for joining me today.
Good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Mark, well, let's start with this. The report that you that the Wisconsin Policy Forum put out shows that we had a record number of questions approved, and we also had a record amount approved in the fall election and for the 2024 year. We had a record number, and I know there's a lot of ways we can go about this, but there's a lot of reasons for this, right? What are some of the factors and why we're seeing so many questions appear on ballots?
Yeah, so that's right. We did see a record number of these questions put to voters, who then in turn approved a record number of them in 2024. And you know, school finance is obviously a complicated topic, but there are a few factors that are kind of playing into this. You know, certainly inflation is a significant one. Over the past few years, you know, the same inflationary pressures that many of your listeners have felt in their household budgets are also affecting the budgets of school districts. There's been a lot of pressure to increase wages for teachers and other school district employees, and that is definitely one factor that's contributing. Certainly one factor that's not a new thing. It's something that's been ongoing for more than a decade now. The state imposes what's called revenue limits, which are a limit that each school district has on the amount of revenue they can take in from the combination of the money that they receive in state aid and the money that they levy in their local property tax levy. And those revenue limits have not been increasing at a pace to match inflation for more than a decade. And so there's a cumulative effect over a number of years when, you know, you've had year after year when those revenue limits have not kept pace with inflation. It has put more and more districts in a position where they feel compelled to put these referendums on the ballot. And you mentioned in your intro kind of what some people might feel like, what even am I voting on here? And just to be clear, you know, these referenda basically allow the school district to exceed that state imposed revenue limit, to increase their property tax levy above what the state would otherwise be limiting them to do. So that, you know, those factors are definitely two of the biggest ones. Of course, there are other ones as well, but those are two of the biggest factors, I think, in terms of why we're seeing so many of these questions on the ballot.
We saw that 70% roughly passed here in the fall, which, you know, seems like a good number compared to, you know, earlier elections this year. And of course, elections last year when, you know, we, you know, for districts, you know, struggling to get out of the 50% ranges for some of those elections, it seems like 70%. It felt kind of like a win just kind of at its face. But when you look at historical data, it sure seems like, you know, for a presidential election, you know, 70% for the districts that passed it, of course, they feel pretty good. But 70% passage rate in a presidential election, how does that compare to past elections?
Well, it helps to kind of take a long-term view on this, because the answer is that that's a lower rate of passage than the most recent several, you know, major election years. By major, I mean like a presidential or a midterm election year. That's a lower rate. So the peak was kind of in 2018 when we saw almost 90% of these referenda get approved. But 2018 was definitely an outlier. That was the high point. And since that time, we've really seen a declining passage rate. But if you go back further in time, you know, into the aughts, into the 90s, 70% is still a pretty high approval. You know, in the 90s and the aughts, we were routinely seeing rates of approval for these referenda that were 50% or even lower. So, you know, the kind of long-term trend is we saw these approval rates really increase quite significantly in the 20-teens. And then they do in the 2020s, they do seem to have ticked back down a little bit, but are still relatively high compared to where they were 15 or 20 years ago.
Talking to Mark Sommerhauser, he's the communications director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're recapping a bit of the year in school referendum. You know, one piece of data that was shared in your report that I found really fascinating was and how it was tied to sort of the public sentiment towards public education, right? So there's data from the from Marquette University's law school poll and from, you know, just looking at the passage rates. It was really interesting just kind of seeing how those the trend lines, the arcs kind of went with each other in that. And I know that the public sentiment towards public education, it's like a lot of things. It kind of depends on, you know, what you vote for broadly. But I found it really fascinating that the referendum rate and the public sentiment as measured by the Marquette University Law School poll, it just seemed like the data points really strongly went with one another.
Yeah, it really tracks pretty well. And a lot of credit to Marquette Law School and Charles Franklin, who runs that poll. He fortunately asks a question on that poll that is very relevant to this discussion. And he's been, and even more helpfully, he's been asking it since 2013. So now we have more than a decade of these survey response data. We can kind of see how the public has felt about, you know, this question. And just so your listeners know that since 2013, the Marquette poll has asked Wisconsinites, which is more important to you, reducing property taxes or increasing spending on public schools, right? Which is essentially the question that voters are weighing in on when they vote on these referenda. And that number has gone up and down somewhat. You know, when he first was asking the question, that was not long after the Great Recession in 2013. So you had, you know, it was pretty close to 50-50 at that time. In the later 20-teens, we started to see a pretty solid majority of folks saying they actually favored increasing spending over on public schools over reducing their property taxes. But we have seen in the last few years that start to flip around. And I think, again, you know, just another impact of inflation, I think, is got to be at least a part of what's going on there, because as more households are feeling the squeeze of having to pay more for a lot of different things, it does seem like more people are saying, I would prefer to have the property tax cut over increasing funding for my local public school.
And Mark, that's a fascinating idea, because when you talk about school referendums, it sometimes isn't the only referendum on the ballot. And we've seen it, and we've seen it more frequently in recent years, that it's not just schools going to referendum, but it's school, or it's counties and it's cities and municipalities that are also seeking to go beyond the levy limit. Now, I know that the last budget and legislation has started to address some of this in terms of revenue sharing, but you know, when it comes to talking about school referendums, it's not in a vacuum if it's the only thing on the ballot. There are other ballot measures that have come up as well here in recent years, right?
That's correct. And in fact, you know, if for those of your listeners who are residents of the city of Madison, you know, they know that on their ballots here this November, they saw both a school district referendum and a city of Madison referendum on the same ballot to exceed the state imposed limits and be able to increase property taxes above what they otherwise would have been limited to. And that's still pretty unusual for voters in a community to see, or a school and a city referendum at the same time, but it is probably going to happen more now that we're seeing both very high rates of school districts going to these referenda, and now more and more, as you said, cities, villages, and counties, towns doing these referenda, which that used to be very unusual until fairly recently. It's still not nearly as common as the school district referenda, but again, it is becoming more common.
Mark, I want to ask just a bit too about last year's biennial budget and how that might have affected things for school districts, because, you know, when you look at it on its face, that all this extra money, you know, goes into education, some of it to public education, some into vouchers. There were things like increasing, you know, the caps. There were things like increasing the per pupil aid. How do you think that, you know, generally affects maybe what happens in this next budget cycle, knowing that public education was such a hot topic in the last budget, and I think some legislators and maybe some members of the public feel like education was already addressed in the last budget cycle.
Yeah, so there was a significant provision in the most recent state budget. In the prior budget that was passed in 2021, the state of lawmakers did not increase revenue limits for school districts at all. They kept them flat. They did change course somewhat in the most recent budget here in 2023. They increased those revenue limits by $325 per pupil in both years of the biennium in 2024 and 2025. So that was a significant increase, but coming on the tails of 2 years in which there were no increases at all, you know, some districts are in a position where they're saying, you know, those increases were just not enough for us to keep pace with inflation and some of the cost pressures that they're seeing, which, you know, to be clear, are always first and foremost about personnel. You know, that's always by far the biggest cost that school districts incur is just paying teachers, paying staff, paying administrators. And, you know, we have seen somewhat of a bidding war in some parts of the state for, you know, really highly qualified teachers, because kind of separately from the issue of inflation, you know, we've seen a lot of teachers now retire out of the workforce. And what we're hearing from a lot of school districts in many parts of the state is there really is quite a shortage of qualified teachers that they were not necessarily seeing 10 years ago, but that due to a wave of retirements and some other factors, you know, there's quite a squeeze that a lot of school districts are facing to be able to hire enough, you know, really highly qualified teachers.
I'm talking to Mark Sommerhausen. He is with the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And Mark, just a couple more questions on the topic, because, you know, again, this is something that affects, I think, a lot of people when you talk about school funding. And it's going to be, you know, one of, if not the biggest topic that comes up in this next budget cycle. And I just want to start with the ask of the DPI and our education head here, our state superintendent, Dr. Jill Utterly, in the money that they are seeking. And a lot of the money is tied that in the ask to how schools are reimbursed for special education funding. And I think this is probably an area where, you know, I think, you know, for a lot of people, maybe the math can be hard to understand sometimes, but essentially, you know, schools are reimbursed at a certain rate for special education costs. And the ask this year, a big portion of the billions-dollar ask is to increase that reimbursement rate for schools. You know, how, you know, just from a policy perspective, you know, with the budget surplus and everything, it doesn't seem likely that all of the budget surplus is going to go to public education. But I'm curious about, you know, what mechanisms or maybe the likelihood of something happening in that regard, just given that this continues to be a very important topic for legislators.
Yeah, so there's no question that's going to be one of the most significant parts of the state budget debate, as it always is. You know, state aid to school districts is the single biggest chunk of the state budget. So that's always a contentious topic. You know, the state superintendent's proposal is certainly an ambitious proposal. She is proposing, as part of her budget request, that there would be a per pupil revenue limit increase of $425 per in each year of the next biennium. She's also looking at some other areas here where she wants to really significantly increase the rate at which the state reimburses school districts for special education costs. Right now, that reimbursement rate is quite low. It's just a little above 30%. She wants to increase that all the way up to 90%. Which again is a really ambitious proposal. I think, you know, fair to say that under the current, you know, Republican majorities in the legislature, it's unlikely, very unlikely that they're just going to pass that request as is. A lot of the debate goes back to the fact that, you know, the state superintendent is saying, well, we have this very historically very large budget surplus, about a $4 billion budget surplus. She's saying, hey, you know, it's time for us to take some of that surplus and invest it in our public education system. You're going to see, of course, on the other side of this, a lot of lawmakers in the majority, they're going to be seeking to use that surplus for tax cuts. And so that's going to be a lot of the tension that's going to be happening in that budget debate. And of course, there's many other areas of the state budget as well that are going to be where you're going to have stakeholders that are going to be seeking funding increases as well. So that's part of the debate that's going to be had.
Mark, would you be willing to stick around for one more quick segment just to wrap up the topic?
We can stick around for just a little bit.
All right, Mark, we'll have Mark back on right after this. This is the Maggie Don Show on Civic Media.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, Professor Emeritus of Democracy at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
In 1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Welcome back. This is the Maggie Dodd Show on Civic Media. I'm Jimmy Cuska, the sports director here at Civic Media, filling in today. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Jess P.S. will be guest hosting the Dominic Salvia Show. Stay tuned for that. I'm once again rejoined by Mark Sommerhauser. He's the communications director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. And I want to put a bow on this discussion on school referendums because I think the summary written by your colleagues that did the report on this, I think really summed up kind of the state of things. It's a really complicated mess of things, right? There's a whole bunch of factors into it. But I think the part that really stands out to me is that there is some consequence to this all, right? So if schools aren't adequately funded, you know, there are things in play like the inability to hire or retain staff, or in one district's case, in southwestern Wisconsin, talking about dissolving their district entirely. And I find this that when we get to this point in terms of policy, in terms of, you know, where we go with funding things, we have to understand that, you know, there's decisions that are made, you know, at all levels, but when we get down to it with school funding, that with so many districts asking funding, I think the conclusion drawn and as it's written on the page here for Wisconsin Policy Forum, that there's a lot of pressure not just on voters to help fund schools, but, you know, just about everything going on right now in government, not just school districts, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And, you know, we've seen both in school districts, but also in local government, cities, villages, towns, counties, they've been dealing with a lot of these same cost pressures that school districts have. Now, they're in a little different situation in that in the last budget, the state did pass a pretty historic increase in shared revenue, which is the state's main form of aid to cities, villages, towns, and counties. And so, you know, a number of them are seeing a significant increase in their state aid. Although some are seeing a much bigger increase than others. But, you know, for school districts, I think they're in a little bit of a different spot of saying, you know, we did not see an increase in those revenue limits 2 years ago. We did see somewhat of an increase in the most recent budget, but, you know, a lot of them are feeling like they still are not, collecting the revenues that they need to operate in the way that they want to operate. The other piece of these referenda, too, is that you can kind of divide them into two buckets. Some of them are for operating costs for the district, but then some of them are for capital projects. And, you know, a lot of these school districts have facilities that were built during the baby boom, right, in the 50s and 60s and 70s to accommodate, you know, the significant increase in school pupils that we saw during that period. But a lot of those facilities now are reaching the point where they either need a large investment to renovate them, or in some cases there's proposals to replace them. So, you know, that's the other piece of this, is that for some districts there's pressures for the operating costs. For other districts, there's really a push to have new or renovated schools that are kind of spurring some of these referendum questions.
And of course, you know, the consolidation of schools too, and not necessarily district consolidation, but, you know, just in school buildings. I know Madison, a big part of their ask in this last, just as an example, was that they needed to, you know, they needed fewer buildings. La Crosse, same thing. They needed fewer buildings because of declining enrollment. And I think that's the part that a lot of legislators will point to if they're maybe not all in on increasing the, you know, per pupil or increasing the funding for public education. They'll point to the enrollment figure and say, well, there's fewer students, so why is there a need for more money? And schools usually counter with things like, well, you know, cost of people and the cost of keeping the lights on is also increased at the same time. So if budgets remain flat or decrease, it's harder to serve that purpose. I'm, you know, just to wrap up a final thought on this, Mark, where do we see, you know, policy-wise things maybe happening in this next cycle that maybe address school referendum funding? Because as we've talked about, it is a very hot topic, not just for people that are involved in education, but I think just about every legislator has at this point heard enough about it that they're researching and dealing with this topic head on themselves.
Yeah, I think, I mean, both things that you just said here a moment ago are correct, in that the broad trend statewide is of declining enrollment. And so it's reasonable for some folks who are a little more skeptical of these referenda to point to that and say that, you know, hey, you know, in many districts, perhaps in the district that the voter is in, there's fewer students. But as you said, also, it's also true that the school district can kind of counter to that and say, well, you know, the cost of just about everything has increased very dramatically over the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, a modest enrollment decline does not necessarily mean that the district's costs just to continue doing what they're doing have declined. In many cases, they have increased. I think, you know, the first debate that's going to need to be had is within the next state budget, which is going to, you know, that debate is going to start to happen early next year. That's for the 2 year, the state budgets go in 2 year cycles. So it'll be for the 2 year starting on July 1st of next year. And that's going to be, I think, a very vigorous debate because, again, you know, traditionally the state has not had a surplus. Traditionally it's the other way around. And the state is, you know, dealing with the deficit. So the fact that there's a large surplus this year is quite historically unusual. And I think schools and many other stakeholders are going to see this as kind of an unusual opportunity to get a funding increase while the state actually has money to do that. But, you know, the state has to balance that against the many other, you know, services that it funds. And the fact that while it has a lot of money in the bank right now, that's one-time money. You know, that's not money that it can count on collecting that much in surplus year after year. That's money that it has in hand at the moment. But, you know, the state obviously has to be careful not to overcommit itself beyond the revenues that it could project to take in over the next few years. And when you increase aid to schools, you can't really pull that back without really angering a lot of people. So I think the state will want to be careful to keep that in mind as well when that debate is being had.
Mark Sommerhauser from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Mark, you've been extremely generous with your time talking about a very complicated subject. I appreciate all of your time and insight on this. Thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Mark. And that'll do it for me. I'm Jimmy Cuska, Civic Media's sports director. Turning it back over now to our producer, Jess P.S. We'll take you through the Dominic Salvia Show, which comes your way next here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time, an all-new live show back in the studio. Join us for a look back at the holiday weekend and prepare you for the week ahead.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life.
Sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.